Morning. Today's daf and Shabbos Kuf Nun Zayin. This is the last daf of Maseches Shabbos. We begin on the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Nun Vav Amud Beis. The Mishnayos here are going to be continuing its discussion regarding the preparation of food for an animal. And so the Mishnah begins. Mechatkon is the lulav lifnei behema. Now we already quoted this Mishnah in yesterday's Gemara, but this is the actual Mishnah itself. One is allowed to cut up a gourd in front of an animal. Vesa nevel lifnei klavim. And one can even cut up a nevela in front of dogs. That means to say that the nevela obviously has an animal that has not gone through a shechita. It died without the benefit of a shechita. Of course, this makes an issa d'oraisa for a human to consume this nevela. But nevertheless, it would be mutter. It would be totally permitted to give it to the dog. The consideration on Shabbos, obviously, is that it was not fit going into Shabbos for consumption for the dog. Meaning we're going to assume that it died on Shabbos. And so that means that going into Shabbos, it was not muchan, it was not prepared for this purpose of being fed to a dog. And yet the Mishnah says that one is allowed to cut it up for the dog. And this obviously poses a challenge of muksa, so it must be that the author of our Mishnah, the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, is the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. That despite the fact that this animal is what you and I would describe as being muksa, but the Tanakhama's position is that we're going to be more makom in regards to the topic of muksa, which has been Rabbi Shimon's position throughout the entire Masechta. In fact, as we continue now in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Amar im lo haisa nevela me'erev Shabbos asura. Rabbi Yehuda says that if it was not a nevela going into Shabbos, so then it's going to be asur. Meaning that the only way that this could have been viewed as animal food is only if it was animal food before Shabbos began. But once Shabbos has begun and the animal was not designated as animal food, so the animal, or I should say the carcass of the animal, now is going to be muksam. Lefi she'enam ne'muchan. And so what we find over here is, once again, the very basic and classic machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. As now we're approaching the end of the Masechta, this is something that we've come across again and again throughout the Masechta. This is a general theme of the machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. And here it's no different, where Rabbi Shimon takes a more expansive view of muksa, and Rabbi Yehuda takes a better. According to Rabbi Shimon, he's more lenient, meaning his scope of muksa is extraordinarily limited. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, he takes a more expansive view of what is included within the scope of muksa. And generally speaking, in terms of giving some sort of parameter or understanding behind this machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, and we made this point earlier in the Masechta as well, but it's worthwhile repeating, it's basically where do we set the default setting of any particular item going into Shabbos. And that means to say that according to Rabbi Shimon, the default setting of any item is that I plan on using it for Shabbos, even if I don't designate it, even if I don't say it. But the default setting of every particular item going into Shabbos, it has to be a kli, can't be a non-kli. But the default setting is that that's something that I plan to use for this particular Shabbos. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda's position is no. The default setting of something is that I don't plan on using it for Shabbos unless I go ahead and specify and designate that I am going to use it for Shabbos. And once you give this kind of understanding behind the machlokas between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, so many of the examples that we see really fit wonderfully within this framework, within this parameter of Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda. Take a look at our Mishnah over here. Our Mishnah over here talks about cutting up a nevela for an animal. So that means to say that going into Shabbos, the animal was a live animal. You certainly can't feed it to your dog as a live animal, but Rabbi Shimon will tell you, yeah, but the default setting is that it's something that if I could get benefit from it, if there is something that could be done with it, so I'm interested. And that's the default setting, and so therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's not going to fall under the category of muksa. And Rabbi Yehuda's position is no. That the default setting is that something is muksa, unless I go out of my way and say that this is something that I want. According to Rabbi Yehuda, would that be possible in this scenario over here? Can a person go ahead and pre-assign a mukhan status to something which is not yet prepared? Presumably the answer is no, but something worthwhile to consider. Itmar, we start with the Gemara. We're in Kufnun Vav Amud Beis. In the Gemara, Itmar, the Gemara now quotes the following. And we're going to have three Amoraim that are going to be siding with Rabbi Yehuda, three Amoraim that are going to be siding with Rabbi Shimon on the topic of Muksa. Amar Ula, we start with the Shita of Ula. Halacha to Rabbi Yehuda. So the Halacha, in fact, follows like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, it followed immediately by Shmuel. Now, presumably, Shmuel's in parentheses over here because he's going to come up in just a moment. And the Gemara is going to spend time on the Shita of Shmuel. So, not to say that it's an incorrect girsa, it just perhaps doesn't belong at this point in time in the Gemara. Rav Savar Halacha Rav Yehuda, and Rav is also of the opinion the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. By the way, if you want to follow the mnemonic that is quoted over here is the Ayin Resh Lamed, followed by the Shin Ches Zayin. And so these are three Amorim on one side, three Amorim on the other side. So on the Ayin Resh Lamed side, so you have Ula, now we have Rav. Rav is of the opinion the halacha follows like Rabbi Yehuda. And how do I know that? Midikarchi Dezuze. Now I know that because of the case of the mats on the ship. Mats were used on the ship. They were generally speaking there for covering cargo and commercial cargo. And so Rav was of the position that since those mats were basically used for commercial purposes, so therefore they have the status of muksa and they cannot be used on Shabbos. Rav Asr Shmuel Shari. Rav says that those mats are going to be Asr Shmuel says that they're permitted. And so so we see that Rav is also in accordance with the Sheet of Rav Yehuda, taking the more expansive position of Muksa. And one more, Af Levi Sever Halachik Rav Yehuda. And Levi's of the position that we follow like Rav Yehuda. And the Gemara says, and I know that based on what? Kihad Levi, Kevin Maisei, Trefa Sakame Biyumatava. So they would bring a Trefa to Levi on Yantav. Now, we say the word Trefa, we don't know at this point in time that it is definitively a Trefa, meaning it is a candidate to being a Trefa, meaning the animal was shechted, it was shechted properly. On the other hand, however, it has to be examined in order to ascertain whether it's a trefa. Just in general, we should all know that in terms of the general assumptions we make regarding an animal, so the Gemara in Chulin tells us that generally we assume that an animal is not a trefa, meaning that once an animal has been shechted properly, so we assume that the animal died with a proper shechita, and on top of that, we also assume that the animal did not have any kind of illness or any kind of wound within its body. That's what we generally assume. There's a minhag Yisrael, it's an old minhag Yisrael, that we do check the lungs. But short of that, we are generally speaking assuming that the animal is becheskas, not being a trefa. But apparently there was some sort of issue over here, and the animal was going to be checked to see whether or not it was a trefa. And lohava chazile ela ki yasev akil kalasa. And now, as far as Levi was concerned, Levi was only ready to check the animal only when it was right by the garbage dump. That means to say that if Levi, in fact, rendered the animal to be a trefa, if he paskined that the animal is a trefa, so what he didn't want to do is he didn't want to carry the animal, because carrying the animal would violate muksa. And so, therefore, what he wanted to know is that he would be right by the garbage so that he would be able to deposit this animal, not even deposit. He could just simply leave the animal over here in the garbage dump, considering the fact that it's a trefa. The Amr Dumalam is kashra, and the Gemara just spells it out. The possibility is that the animal is not kosher, but afilo klavim lo chazia, and it's not even going to be fit for dogs. Now, not going to be fit for dogs, why not? And the answer is because it's muksa, because Levi subscribes to the Sheet of Rav Yehuda that it is in fact going to be muksa. Okay, those are the three Amoraim who are all subscribing to the Sheet of Rav Yehuda, who subscribes to the wider scope of muksa. On the other side of this, you have three Amoraim who subscribe to Rabbi Shimon. Shmuel Amar Lachik Rabbi Shimon. Shmuel's of the position that we follow Rabbi Shimon Rav Ziri. Savar Halachik Rabbi Shimon Ditnan. Now, as far as Ziri is concerned, well, Shmuel, by the way, we saw just moments earlier in the case of the mats that were used to cover the commercial cargo. Now we're going to be seeing Ziri. Ziri says the halach is like Rabbi Shimon. And how do we know that? Based on the following. Ditnan. Behemish Amesa. Lo Yizizan Mimkomo. That if an animal dies, and we're describing over here on Yantav, this is a Mishnah in Beitza. So if the animal dies on Yantav, so lo yizizena mimkomo, you're not allowed to move it. Now, consider the fact that if it died without a proper shechita, so it could be fed to the dog. So again, this goes to the basic question of, is the animal subject to being muksa or not? And Ziri on that Mishnah said, behemas kachim. That Mishnah is talking about an animal that was a carbon, that was already designated as a carbon. So there, when you have behemoth kachim and the animal dies, so there is nothing you could do with that animal, meaning you can't be poda, you can't redeem that animal, right? We discussed this a number of times in Seder Kachim, that you're not allowed to redeem a carbon in the event that you need to redeem it, meaning it can't be brought as a carbon. You're not allowed to redeem the carbon if the only purpose of redemption is just simply to feed it to the animals. It's a bizayon kachim. It's just simply not a proper way to deal with a carbon. So there's nothing you could do with a carbon, and therefore, under those circumstances, it's going to be muksa. But under normal circumstances, meaning if I just have simply an animal that died on Yantiv, so then you can feed it to your dog. Why? Because Ziri understands that the halacha falls like Rabbi Shimon. Ava b'chulin shapir damir. But when it comes to chulin, then you can go ahead and you can feed it to your dog because he follows like the shita of Rabbi Shimon. Va'af Rabbi Yochanan amar halacha to Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yochanan is also of the opinion that the halacha follows like Rabbi Shimon. How do I know that? Me and my Rabbi Yochanan hachi. Does Rabbi Yochanan really say that? V'hamar Rabbi Yochanan halacha k'sam mishnah. Now the Gemara says, now for Rabbi Yochanan to say that the halacha follows like Rabbi Shimon, so that has to be balanced against the other position of Rabbi Yochanan that we say throughout Shas. And that is that Rabbi Yochanan always subscribes to anonymous Mishnah. And so therefore what we're going to take a look now together and see is that is there an anonymous Mishnah out there that would take one way or another on the issue of Muksa, whether we pass on like Rabbi Shimon or we pass on like Rabbi Yehuda. Here, as we now turn to the top of Kuf Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, so over here we're going to be citing a number of Mishnayos. First, a Mishnah in Beitzah. Mishnah says, Ein Mevakin Eitzen Min Hakoros. One is not allowed to chop up wood from the beams on Yantav. V'lo Min Hakorosh Nishbar B'Yantav. Or, let's say there was a beam that broke on Yantav. So you're not allowed to use it for firewood. Presumably, the reason why you're not allowed to is because going in to Yantav, it was not set aside as firewood. And so, therefore, it's going to be Muksa. That is now a Stam Mishnah. An anonymous Mishnah, clearly taking the position of Rabbi Yehuda. And so what we find over here is it's not Mishnah like Rabbi Yehuda. How can you tell me that Rabbi Yochanan is passing like Rabbi Shimon when meanwhile Stam Mishnah is going like Rabbi Yehuda? So Rabbi Yochanan, Hahu, Ki Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Masni Lay. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan, when learning that Mishnah in Beitzah, is not learning it like a Stam Mishnah. In fact, when he teaches that Mishnah, he has attached to that Mishnah, this is the Shita of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, so it is not a Stam Mishnah, so therefore he is not bound to that Mishnah. Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, but I have another Mishnah, another Stam Mishnah. Matzchilim by Rema Satevan. Avalo be'itzim shebemuksa. So when one is going to be using fuel for Yantav, so he's going to get wood. Where is he going to get the wood from? So the Aremus Atevin, so the pile of straw, so that is set aside for fuel and that he can use. However, Eitzim Shibamuksa, when it comes to wood in the backyard, now it's a little bit confusing over here because the word Muksa, we're describing Muksa, we're talking about Muksa, and now we're describing Muksa, but the word Muksa over here in the context of the Mishnah is not describing Muksa in as we're using it right now, but rather the word Muksa over there just simply means the backyard. And back then, the backyard was something that was much less frequently used. And so under those circumstances, so one is not allowed to use the wood in the back because it, generally speaking, was not set aside for firewood. And so what we find over here is a Mishnah, it's a Stam Mishnah, and because the wood in the back was not generally set aside for firewood, so therefore one is not allowed to use that wood, meaning that that Mishnah is subscribing to the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. To which the Gemara says, Hasam be'arzei ve'ashuche. Now the Gemara says that we're talking about wood over there that is cedar wood and another type of wood. Rashi describes it as a female cedar. Okay. Only recently have I discovered the idea that when it comes to trees, there's a male and there's a female. Rashi writes this as matter-of-factly. Anyway, so it is, the point is that it is, these are very special types of wood, and the Muktzah Machmas Chisar and Kisa Gemara says that they fall into the category of, because they're so special, because they're so expensive, we are now in a category of Muktzah Machmas Chisar and Kis, Afila Rabbi Shimon Moda, and even Rabbi Shimon is going to agree that that kind of Muktzah is something that you cannot handle on Shabbos nor on Yantav. And so, okay, so once again, that's not a Stam Mishnah that Rav Yochanan has to deal with. Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, but I do have another Stam Mishnah, and that's the following, in Mashkin V'Shochten Es, Amid Barrios of Amashkin V'Shochten Es, Abaisos. The Mishnah in Beitzah. This is at the end of the Masechta over there in Beitzah. It's interesting how we are learning it at the end of Beitzah, we're learning it at the end of Shabbos. but both the end of Beitzah and the end of Shabbos deal with Muksa, so it is perfectly understandable. And that is that one is not allowed to both water and shecht an animal that is midbarios. That means that the animal is not domesticated, but one is allowed to water and shecht an animal that is domesticated. As far as watering is concerned, so we've gone over this point a number of times. Prior to Shechita, they would hydrate the animal, and they would do so so that when, after you shecht it, it would be easier to flay the animal. Okay? That's, Rashi says that numerous times. In the meantime, however, what's the difference between a non-domesticated animal and a domesticated animal? And presumably, and obviously we're talking about a yantiv over here, because that's you're allowed to shecht on yantiv, but what's the difference between the two? And obviously the difference is muksa, meaning that the wilder animals are something that you were not prepared, you didn't prepare for yantiv, and the domesticated animals are animals that you did prepare for yantiv, and so the difference is going to be muksa. And so what comes out over here is that we have a Stam Mishnah, and the Stam Mishnah is going like the Shita of Rabbi Huda. And so there's no way out of this one. This is a Stam Mishnah. It's going like Rabbi Huda. And Rabbi Yochanan says that the Halacha follows like Stam Mishnah. We're a little bit stuck over here. What do we do? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan Stam Achrina Ashkach. Yes, that's true. But Rabbi Yochanan is familiar with another Stam Mishnah, which is the following. And this we saw earlier in the Masechta. We saw this back on Kuf Mem Gimel, and that is Beit Shammai Omrim Magbin Me'al HaShulchan Atzamos V'Klibin and Beit Sila Omrim Misalek Es HaTavla Kula U'Minna Ara. What do you do with the bones and the shells after the meal is over? And so a machlok is between Beit Shammai and Beit Sila. Now, as far as the bones are concerned, remember Rashi back on that sugya said that the bones over there were totally inedible, not edible by humans, not edible by dogs as well. It's a difficult shot of Rashi. But anyway, so Magbiya Me'al HaShulchan Atzamos V'Klipin, so one is allowed to, according to Beit Shammai, one is allowed to move the bones and the shells off the table. And Beit Sila says, no, the only thing you could do is you could just simply tilt the table board over and have them fall over, meaning tilt them on the side, but you cannot move them directly. And V'Amar Rav Nachman, now, at that point in time, you should remember, we did the same thing when we saw the Mishnah, and that was Rav Nachman's correction, so to say. And that is, Anu, Ein Lanu, Ella, as far as reading the Mishnah is concerned, Beit Shammai, Kerebi Yehuda, Beit Sila, Kerebi Shimon, you have to flip around the Shitas, that Beit Shammai follows like Rebbe Yehuda, and Beit Sila follows like Rebbe Shimon, meaning it is Beit Shammai who says that you have to, that you cannot handle it directly, but you can only go about it by tilting over the board. And it is the Shita of Rebbe Yehuda who's of the opinion, and it's the opinion of Beit Sila that you can actually sweep away the bones and the shells directly. What comes out from all this is that now we have Beit Sila being like Rabbi Shimon, and we have Beit Shammai being like Rabbi Huda. And this is a Stam Mishnah. Now, the obvious question is, what do you mean it's a Stam Mishnah? It's not a Stam Mishnah. Stam Mishnah is anonymous. This is not anonymous. It's a machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beit Sila. So what we have to say, and Rashi says it, is that when you have a machlokes between Beit Shammai and Beit Sila, that when Beit Shammai is arguing with Beit Sila, the rejection of Beit Shammai's position is such an absolute rejection that it's as if Beit Shammai's position did not exist. Now, I know that is a serious negation of an opinion, but the Gemara says, but that's how we view the Machlokas. And so once we view the Machlokas that way, we are going to look at that Mishnah as if the Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah. That's, I know it's remarkable, but it's clearly how the Gemara is looking at it. So what you have now is a Stam Mishnah going like Rabbi Shimon. So you have Stam Mishnah versus Stam Mishnah. And so therefore, as far as the rule that Rabbi Yochanan follows a Stam Mishnah, that's true. At the same time over here, when it comes to Muksa, we have a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Huda. We have a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Shimon. And so therefore, there is nothing that is forcing Rabbi Yochanan into one position over another. And Rabbi Yochanan passes like Rabbi Shimon. So where do we stand right now? So a major machlokas Tanaim in terms of the scope of Muksa, and a major machlokas amongst the Amoraim in terms of who we follow. Three Gedolei Amoraim are following like the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Three Gedolei Amoraim are following the Shita of Rabbi Shimon. And where do we land on all this? Pligi ba Rav Achav Ravina. And now we go to the late generation Amoraim, and that is Chanamar b'Chol Shabbos Kula Halacha k'Rabbi Shimon. Then when it comes to Chol Shabbos Kula, the Halacha in fact follows like Rabbi Shimon. Labar min Muksa Machmas Mius. The only notable exception is Muksa Machmas Mius, where if something is disgusting, there we're going to follow like Rabbi Yehuda, in that it's going to be described as muksa. For example, the old lamp. the lamp that was already used, it's disgusting. In other words, no one's going to want to use it for a makeshift bowl. It's got dirty oil inside. It's got residue of ashes inside. And so, therefore, that's going to be muksa according to everyone. The Chadamar, now the other one says, b'muksa machmas mios nami halach k'Rabbi Shimon. No, even in the category of muksa machmas mios, the halach is going to be like Rabbi Shimon, levar mi muksa machmas isser. The only notable exception is muksa machmas isser. When something is prohibited on Shabbos, so that is going to have the status of muksa. And that's where Rabbi Shimon is going to yield that has the status of muksa. My nihu, so for example, near Shehidlik Baba Osa Shabbos, a candle that was lit for that particular Shabbos, where putting out the flame is going to be a violation of Shabbos. So therefore, the flame itself is going to be muksa. And the wick that the flame is on is going to be muksa. And the nair that's going to be on is going to be muksa, meaning everything now becomes a basis for the fire. And the fire you're not allowed to put out. And so we're looking at the category of muksa, machmas iser. And in that regard, even Rabbi Shimon is going to agree that is going to be muksa. Ava muksa machmas chisar and kiss. But if it's something which is muksa machmas chisar and kiss, it's something that the person, the owner of it, is so careful with that item, either because of its monetary value or it just has a lot of other types of values to him. So in that case, I feel Rabbi Shimon Moda, even Rabbi Shimon will agree that is going to be muksa. And for that, we have a Mishnah, Dinan, Kol HaKelim, and Talim B'Shabbos. We go back to the 17th perek of Masechet Shabbos, Kol HaKelim, and you are allowed to move any kli on Shabbos except Chutz Mimasar Gadol, V'yasei Shel Machareisha, except for a really large saw and the instrument that was used for plowing. And those items are expensive items, precious items to its owner. So they fall into the category of muksa machmas, chisar and kiss. And even that, Rabbi Shimon would agree, is going to be subject to muksa. Where do we land when all said and done? So major machlokas, and the Gemara's conclusion is, to a certain degree, we're certainly going to paskin like the shita of Rabbi Shimon. It's just going to be a question now of with what notable exceptions. So the Gemara's for sure goes in accordance with the Rabbi Shimon Shita that we're going to be makel regarding muksa, but when it comes to muksa machmas mius, there a debate amongst the later Amoraim whether or not we're going to be following like Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda. The halacha, in fact, says that by muksa machmas mius, the halacha also is going to be following like Rabbi Shimon. The one exception, which clearly we're going to define as being muksa, is going to be muksa machmas iser. If something is in fact going to be usher on Shabbos, like the example of the flame that's lit, so that for sure is going to be subject to muksa, and that is agreed to by everyone. And the category of muksa machmas chisar and kiss, when something has value to its owner, that also is going to be muksa. Adkan, that takes us to the end of muksa, and we are now approaching the final mishnah of the Masechta. Mafir nedar mishabbos. The mishnah starts off that one is allowed to annul a neder that was made on Shabbos, v'nisham l'darm l'shehin l'tzorach Shabbos, and also she'ila as well. And so over here, just as a quick review, we know that when it comes to a neder that is going to be annulled, it could be annulled in one of two ways. Either the husband or the father, depending on the age of the girl slash woman who made the neder. So either the husband or the father has the right to be mefer the neder. The proper terminology over there is hafara. And that could be done within the first day after having heard the neder, meaning not after the actual neder was made, but after he heard. He, meaning either the father or the husband, heard about the neder being made. Under those circumstances, there doesn't have to be any explanation in terms of the hafara. It's just a simple function of that the neder is only going to be chal. It only will take place, it will only have status when the husband or the father hears about the neder and approves of the neder tacitly. But if the father or the husband wants to annul the neder, it's within his right to do so. And that's what's called afara. And the other one is she'ila. She'ila means that you go to a Talmud Chacham and you explain that I made the neder, but under the circumstances where I didn't take the following into consideration, and had I taken the following into consideration, I wouldn't have made the neder. And so that kind of annulment of a neder is what's called a being matir a neder, allowing or permitting a neder. When it comes to being mater netter, there is no statute of limitations, meaning that as long as you had charata from the time that you made the neder, and it could be going back to however long ago you made the neder, so if you have charata and you go to a Tam HaChacham, so he could be matir the neder. So the husband or the father's ability to annul the neder is hafara. There is a statute of limitations, and that, of course, is one day. There does not need to be any basis for the hafara. It's just simply that the husband or the father does not want that neder to be binding, as opposed to she'ela, where there you go to a Tam HaChacham, and there is no statute of limitations. And so what the Mishnah tells us is that one can do hafara on Shabbos. Now, as far as She'el is concerned, that can be done on Shabbos, but only for things that are relevant for Shabbos. And as far as shuttering the windows is concerned, so that can be done on Shabbos. That goes back to a machlokas that we saw earlier in the Masechta regarding whether or not one is allowed to shutter a window. And this is a machlokas between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim that we saw earlier in the Masechta. Our Mishnah is clearly taking the position that to be that one can put on the shutter. Umodedin es hamatlis. And the Mishnah also adds that that one can also measure a rag, meaning to say that there is a rag that was that came into contact with a with an avatuma. And now the rag is only going to be tameh if it is of a certain measurement. It has to be gimel al gimel. It has to be 3x3. If it's less than that, so it's no longer going to be tameh. So one is allowed to measure it on Shabbos. Modin is a mikvah. One's allowed to measure a mikvah in order to make sure that a kosher mikvah. A kosher mikvah has in volume 40 saw. In linear measurement, it's going to be 3x1x1. 3 amas by 1 amah by 1 amah. If the mikvah is necessary on Shabbos, and there are a number of circumstances where a mikvah will be necessary on Shabbos, so one wants to measure the mikvah in order to make sure it's kosher, so you could measure. And what the Mishnah basically is saying is that under normal circumstances, measuring is prohibited. You're not allowed to measure on Shabbos. Now, without the Mishnah giving us a clear reason why not, perhaps it could be uvda dechol, it's just simply a weekday activity. Perhaps it falls under the category of mimso cheftecha, it's just simply a non-Shabbos activity. However, if it's for a mitzvah on Shabbos, like going into the mikvah, like ensuring that a garment is not tameh, so then you are allowed to measure under those circumstances. And then the Mishnah continues, umaisa, b'mei aviv shel Rebbe Tzedek v'mei abba shel ben Bitnis, and there was an incident during these Tanaim's time, shepakos ha-ma'or b'tapiach, in which what they did is they shuttered in a window using kli cheres, the kashru es mekeda begemi, and then what they did is they tied the kli cheres together with a blade of grass, a long blade of grass, leidaim yesh beinon is posech tefachim lav, in order to know whether or not there is an area of a tefach. This case over here, which the Mishnah only speaks about really cryptically, so we are going to go over it in much greater detail in the Gemara, and we're going to understand the case much better. Umi divrehem, and based on the story, which right now we don't have full clarity on what the story is, but based on the story, we learn lamanush pokikin, that one is allowed to shudder, umodidin, that one's allowed to measure, v'koshrin v'shabbos, and one is allowed to tie on Shabbos. So, whatever the story is, which right now we don't know, but whatever that story may be, so from that story we learn that one is allowed to engage in these activities on Shabbos. And again, going back to what we learned earlier in this very Mishnah, that's only if it's a Dvar Mitzvah, only if it is involved in a Mitzvah. Ibai Luhu. So the first thing that we're going to be discussing is the following, and that is Afar Ben Latzorach Ben Shalol Latzorach, Ushe'el Latzorach In Shalol Latzorach Lo. So one possibility to understand the Mishnah is that when it comes to Hafara, so that the father or the husband can do, and regardless of what it is relevant towards, meaning that Hafara could just simply be done on Shabbos, period. Now, when it comes to Sheila going to a Chacham and having the Chacham be matir you from your neder, that's only if it's relevant to Shabbos. That's one way we can understand the Mishnah. And now you understand why the Mishnah breaks it up into two separate piskas, two separate statements. Oh, Dilmar, perhaps says Gemara hafar nam lezarach in shalol lezarach lo. That no, maybe that's not the right way to understand it, but the right way to understand it is that when it comes to hafara, so that only can be done on Shabbos lezarach, but not shalol lezarach. And v'had the kapalig lehume hadad, and the fact that in the Mishnah it comes up as two separate sentences, mishum de hafara ain't zarach beis din, v'sheilo tzricha basin. It's just simply a functional issue that when it comes to hafara, the basin is required. It's just simply within the power of the father or the power of the husband to do hafara. But when it comes to hatara, a sheila which requires hatara, so there you need a basin. And so that's the reason why the Mishnah broke it up, just simply to understand that they are functionally different, but in terms of the halacha is concerned, they both can only be done l'tzarech Shabbos. So we open up the proposal of what is the right way to understand the Mishnah, and the Gemara goes ahead and deliberates this very point. And the Gemara discusses Tashma Dini Zute the Bei Rapapa. The following was taught in the Yeshiva Rapapa Mefir Nedarim B'Shabbos l'tzarech Shabbos, that one is allowed to do hafara of Nedarim on Shabbos for Tzarech Shabbos. L'tzarech Shabbos in, shalot Tzarech Shabbos lo. And over here now, it seems to be a very simple deal. That it means to say that Hafar can only be done if it's for the purposes of Shabbos, meaning that the Neder somehow affects her Shabbos, and the only time that it can be annulled by the father or the husband is only when it affects the actual Shabbos itself. But not if it is something that is not going to relate to Shabbos at all. Now, on that, the Gemara goes ahead and discusses. And the Gemara says, Lishna Achrina, now in a slightly different version, Ibayilahu, we're going to basically go over the same point again, but over here we're going to really articulate the point a lot better. Meaning, when it comes to Afar, what exactly is the issue? Why is it that there is two possible ways to read the Mishnah? Either you could do Afara on Shabbos, for even if it's Shalol Tzarech Shabbos, or you're going to have to wait till after Shabbos. What exactly are the dynamics of the Mishnah? And here, in this second version, we're going to understand things a lot better. Tzarech HaTarvayu Ketani, when it says Tzarech, it's going on both to Sheila and Afara, v'Shalol Tzarech Lo, Alma Hafaras Nedar Me'es Leis. Now, finally, we're going to have clarity on what the issue is, and that's the following. We know that the father and the husband's ability to be mefer his daughter or wife's neder is only biyom shamo. As we already pointed out in the introduction, it's only going to be on the day in which he heard. Meaning, from the time that he hears, he's given till the end of the day. What, however, is open for a discussion, a debate, is that when we say the end of the day, do we mean a 24-hour period from the time that he heard it? Or does it mean from the end of the, I'll say, business day? But obviously over here I don't mean business day, but I mean the end of the halachic day. And so, it is based on which interpretation we're going to go with. Obviously now, it's really going to dictate whether the father or the husband's ability to be mefer is going to be have any kind of limitations on Shabbos. Because consider, if we say that it's a 24-hour period, so by definition that means there's going to be time after Shabbos. So therefore, do I have to do hafara on Shabbos? No, because there will be time after Shabbos, because presumably you heard at one point during Shabbos. I guess it's possible where you could hear at the very, very beginning of Shabbos and 24 hours later will still be Shabbos. But under normal circumstances, you're hearing about the Neder sometime on Shabbos, and therefore you will have time after Shabbos to be Mefer. And so therefore, if it's relevant to Shabbos, be Mefer. But if it's not relevant to Shabbos, just simply wait till after Shabbos. So the Gemara says, that's good. Now I understand. So, Odilma, or the other possibility is Kikatan Litzarech, Ashelu Diktani Afarfa Aval Hafaras Nadarim, Afilu Shalol Litzarech, Am Afaras Nadarim, Kol Hayom. But the alternative way to understand it is that when it says Biyam Shamo, when the Torah says Biyam Shamo, it means the end of the halachic day. Meaning that regardless of when on Shabbos he heard about the Neder, he will have only till the end of Shabbos to be made for the Neder. Now you understand that once Shabbos comes to an end, his ability to be made for also comes to an end as well. And so therefore, an allowance is given for him to be made for the neder under all circumstances, because if you miss your opportunity by the end of Shabbos, you're going to miss it altogether. So the Gemara says, very good. So now we understand what exactly the machlokus is of these two sides. Tashma. And after all said and done, the Gemara comes to a very clear conclusion. Didni Rav Zute Bar Rav Papi. Mafirin Nedarim B'Shabbos L'Tzarech Shabbos, and one could do Afara on Faras Nedarim on Shabbos for the purpose of Shabbos, L'Tzarech Shabbos in, Shalot L'Tzarech Shabbos lo, and the inference is very clear, only for Shabbos, not for after Shabbos. Amah Faras Nedarim Me'es Leis, so you see that Afaras Nedarim is Me'es Leis, you have 24 hours. And that means to say that if it is relevant to Shabbos and the Hafara is going to allow her to enjoy Shabbos more, so then for sure it could be done on Shabbos. Otherwise, One is to wait until after Shabbos is over, and this clearly is working with the position that when the Torah says B'yom Shemo, you are in fact given a 24-hour period, which means that there will be time after Shabbos to be made for the neder. Amar Vashi Vanan Tanan, Hafar Zedarim Kol Hayom, V'yesh B'dav L'Hakel L'Hachmir. And now Rav Ashi is bothered by the fact that we have a Mishnah. The Mishnah over here is in Nedarim, and it says that when it comes to Afaras Nedarim, there's a Kula and there's a Chumra, and Ketzad, and what is the, and the Mishnah spells itself out. Nedar Leile Shabbos, if the Nedar was made on Friday night. Mefer Leile Shabbos, V'yom HaShabbos, Ashitach Shach, you have until the following night. Nedar Im Chashecha. If, let's say, the Nedar was made on Shabbos, so Mefer Ad Shalotach Shach. So you have only until the night. So that means to say that you have till the end of the halachic day. And regardless of whether the end of the halachic day is 24 hours from now, meaning the neder was made on Friday night, or you have, let's say, only 1 hour until the end of the halachic day, so that is where it serves as a kula, it serves as a chumrah. Anyway, this Mishnah clearly is working with the position that B'yom Shamo is talking about until the end of the halachic day. So the Gemara says, Tanai, the Gemara says, great, it's a Mishnah. It's a Machlokas Tanai, and Hafaras Nadarim Kol Hayom. So Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Amru, Me'es Leis. So you see clearly over here that it is, in fact, a Machlokas Tanai, whether the B'yom Shamo is talking about the end of the halachic day, or is it describing a 24-hour period. So it's a Machlokas, and again, based on that Machlokas, we go back to our Mishnah, and now we understand that when we discuss Hafaras Nadarim in our Mishnah, is it, in fact, going to only be hafara for those things relevant to Shabbos, or is it talking about hafara on every matter, even non-Shabbos related matters, as it is a as your time is going to expire after Shabbos is over. Mishalom ledarim ibaylahu kishelo hayelo panai, odilma afilo hayelo panai. Questions as follows: the sheila you could do on Shabbos for those things that are relevant to Shabbos. What about a scenario in which it was Erev Shabbos, you know that you have a neder hovering over you, and it's going to affect your Shabbos. You made a neder, let's say, for example, about drinking wine, whatever the case is, and you know it's hovering over you, and you actually had time on Erev Shabbos to deal with it. You didn't deal with it on Erev Shabbos, and now you're going into Shabbos with the neder. So we learned in our Mishnah that you can have a she'ela and go to a Talmid Chacham to absolve you of that neder, to relieve you of that neder. However, because you had time before Shabbos, were the Chachamim, under those circumstances, basically going to say to you, you could have taken care of it before Shabbos, you should have, and so therefore a knas. That's the Gemara's question. Tashma de'kikule Rabban le'Rav Zutra b'rei de'Rav Zera. So Rav Zutra apparently made a neder, and the Chachamim got involved. V'shar le'nidre, and they lifted him from his neder. V'afagav de'havalei panai, even though there was time before Shabbos. So we see that this allowance to go to a Chacham to release you of your neder is even when there was time before Shabbos. Shepakugu beisam or betfiach v'kasharos ha-magdecha begemi. And now we're up to the final case of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah very cryptically refers to some sort of scenario. The Mishnah really did not elaborate what the scenario was, but the Mishnah says, based on the scenario, so there are three conclusions that we arrive at, that you're allowed to be pokekin, you're allowed to shudder, and you're allowed to measure, and you're allowed to tie. And we don't exactly know what the story is, so at this point in time, we're a little bit confused in terms of what exactly what the issue was. So, the Gemara goes and explains. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Hilkati Katana Haisa Bein Shnei Batim. There was an alley between two houses, and the Vituma Haisa Sham. And there was a corpse that was right there in the alley. And as we turn now to the top of the Amud Beis, the Gigis Seduka Munachas Agaban. And there was a barrel. The barrel had a crack in it. And there was a barrel that was between the two homes, hovering right over the body. It was basically almost like a, not almost, it was like a roof over the body. And so now we're basically dealing with Tumas Ohel. So let's go over the little that we know regarding Tumas Ohel. When you have Tumas Mace, so the Tuma now goes up, hits the roof, and now is going to come down over every area of the roof. On top of that, if the roof has an opening into an adjacent room, So the tumah is now going to go into an adjacent room. In this particular case over here, so the roof, which is created by the barrel that's in the alleyway, is now going to be, did in fact have a hole that went into an into the house. And so that means to say that if the tumah were to in fact go up and hit the roof, so not only would it cover the entire area under the barrel, but it would also go through the hole and it would go into a house. So, what did they do? So, upakaku es ha-ma'or b'tfiach. So the first thing they did is they shuttered the window. And they shuttered it with a kli cheres. Now, when they used a kli cheres over here, so the kli cheres they would put in on the covering the entire hole, and the kli cheres mi gavo from its exterior is not going to be mekabel tuma. And we know as a basic rule that anything that is not mekabel tuma is chotzeitz bifnei atuma. So it's going to actually stop the tuma from going into the house. Now, obviously, over here, it was done before the person actually died, because if it was after the person died, so then covering up the hole has not accomplished anything. The tumah already went into the house. So over here, so before the person died, so they shuttered the window with the kli cheres, and that was now going to stop the tumah from going up to the top of the barrel and going into the house. Obviously, the tumah would still go and hit the barrel, but it would stop in the back, and it would stop before going into the house. Now, next step. There, as we pointed out, the barrel had a crack in it. Now, if the crack in the barrel was significant, let's say it was an airspace of a tefach by a tefach, so that will now allow the tumah to escape, meaning that the ohel only is going to capture the tumah if the tumah is directly underneath the actual roof. But if there is a tefach by tefach airspace, so and it's directly underneath the mace, so then the tumah is going to go just simply straight up, and it's not even going to go across. So they wanted to know the size of the crack. So what did they do in order to establish what the size of the crack was? So now here comes the measuring. Kasharus amikay de begemi. So what they did is they tied a kli cheres to. This is obviously a different kli cheres, by the way, not the one that was used to shutter the hole. So they took another kli cheres, which they knew was a tefach by a tefach, and they tied it to a gemi, they tied it to a blade of grass, long blade of grass, let's call it a reed, and leida im yesham begigis posech tefach im lav. And that way they will know whether or not the crack in the barrel is going to be a tefach opening, and if it is in fact a tefach by tefach opening, so the tumah is going to just then go straight up, and it's going to escape through that hole, and it's not going to go across, and it's not going to go into the house. So that's the story in more detail, and what comes out now from the story is that one was allowed to remember now the activities that were done in order to prevent the tumah. One, the shuttering of the window, so shuttering is okay. Two, the measuring. In other words, we measure the size of the hole, which for the purposes of making sure that there's no tumah, that's okay. And three, and finally, is that they tied the reed to the kli cheres in order to lower it down into that area. And so there was a shuttering. There was a measuring, and there was a tying. Okay, so now that we understand the story a little bit better, we certainly understand now the conclusions that were arrived at. And so from here we see that pekika, medida, kshira, are all going to be mutter. And the Gemara finishes up the Masechta with the following story. So Ula goes to the house of the Reish Galusa, and he sees Rava Barav Huna. And the Yaseb Avnei Demayev Karmashechle. Now he happened to have been sitting in a tub of water, and it happens to have been Shabbos. And yes, that's strange. And I take us all the way back to Daf Mem, where the Gemara there discussed extensively whether one can go to the bathhouse or one cannot go to the bathhouse. And you'll remember that in stages the Chachamim originally allowed it, then disallowed it. We go back to Daf Mem, and the Yaseb Avnei Demayev Karmashechle, and now he is rubbing. And he was measuring, what was he measuring? I'm not really sure. The tiles, the tub, whatever. He was doing some form of measuring. So Amalei, Amar Dami Rabbanan Medida the Mitzvah. Yeah, it's true. The last Mishnah in Shabbos does say that you're allowed to measure, but that's only measurement as it relates to a mitzvah. But what are you doing over here? The Lav Mitzvah Miyamar? They didn't. If it's not a mitzvah scenario, so they didn't allow it. And so what are you doing now? You're measuring on Shabbos. I see you're measuring on Shabbos. Again, what is he doing? He's counting tiles. not abundantly clear what exactly he's measuring, but he's doing some form of measuring. So the so Amar Lei Misasik Ba'ama Ana. So he says, no, I'm not measuring for any kind of purpose whatsoever. I'm counting, right? I'm doing math. I know the well told over story, which I don't know the veracity of it. The Vilna Gaon in the bathroom, because he wanted to make sure that he wasn't thinking about Torah in the bathroom. So so he did math while he was in the bathroom. It's a strange story. I don't know the veracity of the story, but it speaks to the idea that when you're in a place where you can't be thinking about Torah, so you occupy your mind, you make sure that your mind is still doing something, keep yourself sharp. So he says that's exactly the case over here. Misasik ba'alma. I was just keeping my mind busy, but I wasn't measuring for any particular purpose, and so therefore I was not violating the Isser Derabbanan measuring. And parenthetically, by the way, the Isser of Derabbanan measuring, so it probably falls under the category of either Mimso Chefsecha V'davar Davar, or it could be Tircha Yisera. In other words, it could fall under a number of these rabbinic categories of why exactly it's going to be prohibited. Hadron Lach Mishehechshech. And that is the end of the 24th parak. And obviously with that comes also the end of Shabbos. Mazel tov to everyone who has concluded Masechta Shabbos. And looking forward tomorrow morning to beginning Masechta Erevin.